Everybody, Rob here, getting you ready to talk with Dalton Ross about his oral history of the dragons. But before we get to the show, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at BetOnline. There is no shortage of action going on with our exclusive partners, BetOnline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back with the UFC and the boxing and the NASCAR and the soccer leading the way. And BetOnline has all the best odds and lines for the upcoming games and matches. If you need more, BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC happening every day live for you to check out. Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline also has hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, and all the best props in the business. Visit betonline.ag or use your mobile device and join now to receive your new welcome bonus and start playing today. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at BetOnline. BetOnline to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code podcast1 for your sign-up bonus. Visit betonline.ag. And don't forget that promo code podcast1 for your sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we have a very special treat for you here today because we've done a couple of these in the past where the great Dalton Ross of Entertainment Weekly has gone back and done some oral histories over these last year or so, where he talked about Eric Reichenbach giving away the immunity necklace, talked about Dan's funeral as well. And he's back again with a deep dive, this time back into Survivor history. And of course, that he is unraveling the legend of the great Survivor Ponderosa band, the Dragons. So here with me, the host of EW Live, please welcome in the great Dalton Ross.
You are very kind to indulge me in talking about this, Rob, because This is indulging this article. I mean, to do 12,000 words on a fake band,
yeah,
in a jury house is probably a sign of the quarantine times, I guess.
This on. Well, first off, I think that people should go and check this out. Either go to Dalton Ross on Twitter, EW.com. You could read the full article, and you will enjoy this podcast even more if you read the article first, and then we'll do some follow-ups on everything from the article. But Dalton, the thing that stood out to me as I read this was the article is about how that this idea for the Dragons was born out of the everybody being cooped up. And I think it's Candace that says in the article towards the end about how she's like, you know, it's kind of like how it is now. And I was just wondering, that was your fascination with the Dragons born out of going stir crazy during the time of the quarantine?
Yes and no. So it's the backstory of it is, well, maybe it's not as interesting as I think it is, but I'll tell you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So about 2 years ago, actually, I was kind of, for some reason, I don't even know why. You know, like there are these things that every once in a while you just sort of go back and watch or think about, and like, oh, I'll go put on this stupid YouTube clip,
yes,
video or this or that, whatever. And so every once in a while, just sort of, or maybe I'm writing a recap and somehow it comes up, or maybe it was, you know, who knows, maybe it was the Noble Ones Ponderosa rap video. I can't remember what it was, but about 2 years ago, I just started thinking about the Dragons. And I was actually speaking to this up-and-comer in the Survivor podcasting world. I can't remember his name. Let me look it up. Hold on. I have it. Stefan Farshback, I think.
Yes, 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 yes.
Something like that. I was talking to that guy, and I sort of joked with him about, oh, I'm going to do an oral history on the Dragons. Like, ha, ha, ha. And it was kind of like a joke, but it was half serious. Like, wouldn't that be, like, funny if I did that? But then, like, it's so much work that I just kind of, like, put it away. And then what happened was later I was watching Micronesia, Fans vs. Favorites, with my daughter, who's a big Survivor,
yeah,
fan and watched all the new recent seasons. And I spoke about, she had never watched that. So we were watching that, and I was like, oh, if I'm going to do an oral history, this is what I should do it on, Eric giving away his immunity. And so I kind of did that, and like, is the best Survivor moment ever. And so then after that, I was like, oh, I should now do the best Big Brother moment ever. So I did, you know, Dan's funeral. And those seemed to make sense, and they were a lot of fun to put together. Hard, but fun. So I did those, and then everyone's like, oh my God, what are you going to do next? This, that, but like, dude, like, those things are a lot of work, and they're fun, and I like doing them, but it sort of consumes, if you're sort of like OCD like I am, and you really want to go overboard on a project like I tend to do, it sort of consumes you, you know what I mean? And so I was just like, I just can't do any of these for a while. I just got to like take a break. Like I need a break from doing that. And then the pandemic hit, right? And like, mm-hmm. It's been a tough year for everyone. And I've had sort of in particular a tough year with a lot of personal stuff. I had to put my father into hospice. My mother-in-law died. As I just mentioned to you off air, Rob, a few days ago, actually, my stepfather passed away. There's been a lot of stuff, and it's been tough. And I really kind of needed an escape from that.
Yeah.
And I knew a lot of other people were sort of stuck in this at the time when I started this article, which was in like March or April, literally goes back that far. A lot of people were stuck in like pandemic quarantine, and everyone at that time, I was like, we could all use something fun. Like we could all just use something stupid, like really stupid and goofy and fun, and which of course naturally led me back to the dragons. So I guess the question was, it wasn't the original idea for it, but it is what finally made me sort of turn the ignition key and start it up and get rolling on it. Cause I did, like, that's when I finally started placing calls. And I think I'd always joked with Courtney, like, hey, at some point I'm going to make you talk about this. And then I just started reaching out to people.
Yeah. Well, also, Dalton, I just want to say sorry for everything that you have been going through over these last couple of months. That, you know, hope that you're doing okay. And we really appreciate all of the work that you were able to put into this during that hard time, because this is a really fun piece to go back and take a look at. My favorite part of hearing about all these things is, who was hard to nail down? Did anybody like push back on like, I don't really want to go there with you? Or was there anybody that was person that was a real quest for you to track down?
Well, there's one crossover person from the last Survivor oral history I did, and that is Amanda Kimmel. So before we get to Amanda, everyone else, for the dragons portion of it, and we can talk later about the portion of the other Survivor bands that I sort of touched on at the end, because they were sort of, we can get into that, which was a little, there's some interesting notes about that. But as far as the dragons go, everyone was pretty easy, with two notable exceptions. So Amanda, I knew that Amanda would be difficult from going through it with the Eric oral history. Amanda was very hard to get a hold of. I emailed, I direct messaged on Instagram, I got a number, I texted, tried all this stuff, and I just never heard back. And when I did the Eric one, I just thought, okay, well, this is now, I'm just going to have to write this without Amanda, I have everyone else, so too bad, it's kind of a bummer, but at least I feel like I could still tell this story. And then out of nowhere, like, she then emailed me like a month later, 2 months later, like, oh, I hardly ever checked this, yeah, I'll talk. And I got her, and when I talked to her on that piece, like, her memory was really hazy at first on the Eric stuff. But then as we kept going, she warmed up, you know, your memory gets jogged, and she ended up being great. And she's actually really great in that piece. And I'm really thankful that she spoke to me. So the dragons one is interesting. She's obviously not a super instrumental. Like I could do the story without her, but I wanted to get her. So very similar, Rob, like I have her number now because we've been in community. I'm texting her and I'm emailing her, and just no word back.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, same deal, like a month or two later, she's all of a sudden just like, oh, sorry, I hardly ever checked this account. And she's like, I really don't remember anything about that. And so I texted her a few questions. She responded, and you'll see in the piece, she's in the piece, but she's barely in the piece.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's three quotes, and she's basically, the quotes are all sort of like, I don't really remember. And why should she, to a degree? Like, she wasn't like, you know, this wasn't her baby. This wasn't the thing she was living and breathing and dying with. It was just something she was sort of around as this goofy thing was happening. Think about, like, for me, it's like the equivalent of, like, you went to a party 10 years ago. You didn't host the party, but you were at the party, and, you know, you probably had some drinks at the party, and your memory's probably a little hazy. So she's in there, but she didn't have a lot to say, which is sort of clear.
Yeah.
And so she was just via text. Everyone else was on the phone. The one person that I wanted to get was Probst, and that I didn't get.
Yeah.
This one. I did get him for the last one. As you see in the piece, there's just really one section in particular I want to talk to him about, where he went out to Ponderosa,
right,
and had a session with the dragons, and they all talk about it. And I want to get him on, and he's not doing any press right now. He's sort of, they're trying to get season 41 on the books, and I guess he's dealing with other stuff. And
yeah.
And I didn't necessarily need him. It would have been like, I needed him for the Eric immunity thing.
Yeah.
This one is like, I wanted him. It would have been nice to have him. I want to get his viewpoint of that night, but I didn't have to have him. So that was the only guy I really couldn't get.
Yeah. You bring up Jeff. Yeah. That was fascinating. That part where, there's one point where Jeff Probst and John Kierhofer come over, and, you know, Survivor fans know, John Kierhofer, big, rock fan, that there's, all these challenges have like, different punny names for, different like, musical artists and songs and stuff like that. And of course, Jeff Probst, the former host of Rock and Roll Jeopardy. So he certainly is well versed in music, but he comes to jam with the dragons. And do I have this right? He brings a didgeridoo.
Yeah, he did. And first off, on Kierhofer, you're so right. And if you ever go in the challenge, there's the didgeridoo. By the way,
we just watched
fact,
the Survivor Australian Outback episode, and I have that on standby.
I bought Jeff Probst a didgeridoo once. Back in the day, I don't know if you remember this, he used to blog for EW.
Mm-hmm.
Before we did our Q&As, he blogged. And so every year at the end of the season, I'd get him a little something as thank you, because he put in a lot of time into these really long, meandering, kind of crazy blogs that he would do. They're really weird. And so at one point, I bought him like a folding guitar, because he was taking guitar lessons. It was like a portable guitar that I'd seen on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And so I got him that. And one time I got him a didgeridoo, because I knew he was really into that. So, but anyway, Kierhofer, you're right, is super into rock. Not only do the challenge names or challenges sometimes named after like rock bands or songs, but often the lyrics in the tree mail would be, the words in the tree mail would be like rock lyrics that he'd somehow work in there. And the challenge office trailer's all plastered with like rock posters. So it makes sense that he was there with Probst, and Probst bought a didgeridoo with him. And I guess just had heard about the band, and they went out there and they started all playing like Maggie May together, and they did like a little live performance for Probst. It sounds super awkward. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But they all seem to have fun. They all seem to have fun that night, at least. But he's done that a few times, where he's made some sort of pilgrimages out to Ponderosa. It doesn't happen a lot. And as Courtney says, and as Caitlin Moore, who some people may know, sort of one of the contestant managers, and she's in casting, she said they were really locked down that season. Like, they were really locked down, couldn't go out at all, and they were just bouncing off the walls, JT especially, so they sort of sent Probst out there to at least give him something to do.
Yeah, I love the perspective of Caitlin in this article, because I feel like that she's sort of like, to me, she's like the normal person at the center of this, who's like dealing with all of these very extreme personalities, which I guess is a big part of her job of wrangling all of these different Survivor personalities. But I really did like to get the perspective of sort of like, to me, it was sort of like a sitcom, and she's like the normal person who's like the nucleus with all these like really wild characters orbiting around her.
Yeah, I think Caitlin's sort of super interesting. I love Caitlin. She's great, and she's been through it all so many times. And I think that whenever you're, you know, I can tell you, that people from the production side and people from like the network side, there's certain groups of contestants that they deal with that they love and they have a blast with. And there's other groups that they're just a nightmare. You know what I mean? And some, there's certain seasons when they'll tell me like, oh my God, this group is just like, get me out of here. And there's other times where like, oh no, this group was really fun. Like, they were respectful. They weren't divas and they'd like to have fun. And we had a blast. And this clearly was one of those times as Ponderosas where they had a blast. They just had tons of fun.
Yeah. So the article really breaks down somebody who that I didn't know was involved with this. So Norwood Cheek is the segment producer here who is in charge of making the Ponderosa stuff. And a lot of this is really his brainchild.
Yeah, yeah. His background comes in music. He played in bands, and he played and he had directed music videos as well. Like, so we can get in the video in a little bit. But and what was, you know, there's so much I didn't know when I started this piece, and we can get into the whole tribal council situation with Coach in a little bit as well, which I had no idea of. I had no idea of that. But the one thing I found interesting was the origin of the Dragons. Like, okay, I knew that they had played Rock Band, and that was sort of a joke, and then it became a real band, like, mm-hmm. you know, put real in quotes if you want. But what I didn't realize is that the whole reason, the raison d'etre, that the Dragons started was because they wanted to use the footage of them playing Rock Band in the Ponderosa video series, but couldn't license the music.
Mm-hmm.
So Courtney's singing the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and they're like filming it. They're like, oh, well, wait, we can't play the audio for this because we can't pay the, you know, $100,000 or whatever it's going to be to license the Yeah Yeah Yeahs song. So they said, oh, we'll just create our own music that you can use as a bed under that. And then that's how the whole band grew. And then Norwood, basically, he writes all the music, and he's on his computer on GarageBand writing the music. And then Coach is coming up with the lyrics, and they're all deciding who's going to do one part, and they're all chiming in and doing stuff. And it's mainly Coach, Courtney, and JT, but some of the other jury members, as they came in, they got involved as well.
So there is a shared origin story between the Dragons and Rob's podcast, where when Rob's podcast started, that the second microphone on Rob's podcast was also the microphone from GarageBand. So we share that in our humble beginnings.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, there it is. See, you know, it's just making stars all over the place.
Yeah. The thing that I took away from this, and tell me if you had the same thought, I think that for, you know, Courtney is very clear that she thought it was a goof. It was something fun to do. You know, JT was like, you know, he was going stir crazy. He was bored. I think that Coach thought that this was going to be real. I think that Coach thought that this was going to take off and the Dragons were going to be like go on tour and actually be a real band.
He totally did. He totally did. And he 100% totally did. And you know what? It's like, you and I, we laugh about that, obviously, because why would you think that? And, like, how would you think that this, like, JT, as he says, can barely play five notes.
Yeah.
You know, the Coach has musical training. Obviously, he's very accomplished when it comes to music. But, like, Courtney doesn't know what she's doing. And, like, I mean, like, you know, it's like, how could you possibly think that? But this is also, there's a quote from Norwood in the story that I absolutely love, is that, that's what makes Coach so great, mm-hmm. and that's what makes the Dragons so great. If they were all like, this is a goof and a gag, it'd be fun, but the fact that you have that rock, and Courtney says this as well, this rock of like that is taking it so seriously and is so invested in it, is what makes it so brilliant, and it's what makes Coach so great and so lovable, because he is taking it seriously, and like he still does. Like, if when you read that the piece, he says later, like, he was really bummed out when they came home that they didn't set up a few shows, like do a mini tour. He wanted them to do like a mini tour. And guess what? We laugh about it, but I would have bought tickets.
You know? Yeah.
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't have? If they came to your town, the Dragons, who wouldn't go see that show? Because it would be brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's still one of the things I'm most bummed about, is that I had set up the only Dragons concert. You know, it seems like a funny line in the piece, but it was absolutely true. At the Heroes versus Villains finale, which was in New York City, I said, okay, I did my goofy video show Survivor Talk at that time, which has sort of come and go over the years. And I said, let's get a Dragons unplugged acoustic performance in my office at EW for the show. And they were all into it, and Coach and JT and Courtney were all in, and it was a go. And then essentially CBS put the kibosh on it. And I, at the time, I couldn't figure out why. And I didn't really get a good reason for why. And I think later what it was is as I started to piece together this oral history and some of the, you know, feelings that maybe they were taking this a little too seriously, like with the shirts at tribal council and, and you know, coaches blow up there and certain things like that, that maybe, you know, they just sort of wanted to leave the dragons aside and focus on the finale and not have this goofy fake band sort of, you know, be the focus around the finale time. But I was super bummed about it. And I can clearly Coach was too, because you said it, like he really thought that they could come out of here with an actual musical career or at least give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe like in another season where maybe it wasn't heroes versus villains and it didn't have like, you know, as, you know, epic of, you know, final three and everything with that. Maybe they wanted to sort of like keep the attention focused on the task at hand as opposed to promoting the dragons. But I feel like that it really comes through about how serious Coach took it with a story that I had never heard before. And I feel like that I've heard a lot of these Survivor stories over the years. Dragon's Gate was huge. My mind was blown.
My mind was blown too. And you know, it's funny when you do an oral history sometimes, you know, you talk to people and not everyone remembers everything and you really have to piece it together. And there's an element of that required a lot of back and forth for me to figure out that we can get into related to the shirts. But I'd never heard this story. And it was like my second or third interview, someone kind of just mentioned it offhand, like off the cuff. I'm like, wait, what? Like, what are you saying happened? And to fill everyone in, I mean, hopefully you guys read the story already. You know, yeah, we get to a point where they go to tribal council wearing all black, just as a band. Like, you know, oh, we're going to look like a rock band. We're going to wear all black. Okay. And I guess they tried to wear sunglasses and Probst told them to take them off, to which point Courtney said, hey, we don't need your show, quote, we got webisodes, which is my favorite line in the entire article. Mm-hmm. Like, we got webisodes is something she actually said to Jeff Probst. And so, but so they did that. And then the next tribal council, which actually I think was the very next day, just because of the weird, you know, scheduling of that, they decided to make these dragons t-shirts, these lime green, super ugly t-shirts that then they took a Sharpie and wrote the dragons with a Z on the shirts. And they actually Caitlin called ahead and they got permission to wear them. But my guess is they were just told, hey, they're going to wear these band t-shirts, and weren't told how hideously ugly they were and super distracting. And so they put them all on and they said, all right, this is it. We're going to wear them. And then they show up at tribal council and production's like, yeah, no, you're absolutely not. Are you going on national television? All of you wearing these matching dragons t-shirts with headbands and armbands and like, no, you're turning it into a joke. This show is not a joke. What you're doing may be a joke, but we're actually trying to be like a semblance of being serious here.
Yeah.
You know, we've got our mood music. You know, the tribe has spoken. We're snuffing torches. Like, we can't have you guys, these goofballs over there on the jury, which, by the way, makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Because at this point, how many million people are watching the show? Somewhere like 10 million, 15 million, somewhere.
Yeah, 15, probably somewhere around there. Yeah.
Somewhere around there. And how many people, if the webisode had even aired at this point, you know, are 50,000 people watching the webisode? Like, people will be so confused. What is going on?
Yeah, so they all show up, and then of course they're like, no, take those off. And the coach is like, hey, we got to stand strong. We're going to refuse to go out there. We're going to boycott tribal council unless they wear our shirts. So let's all stand strong. And they're like, all right, we're with you. And then of course they come back and they're like, absolutely not, you're not wearing them. And basically everyone's like, okay, fine, except for Coach, who's refuses to take his shirt off. And this is, you know, I had many people tell me this. They heard his yell. He all of a sudden just screamed at the top of his lungs and took off. He just left. He just walked into the jungle, like just, and had to be chased down by Dave Burris, who at the time was the number two on the show or whatever. He had to chase him down and convince him to come back, but Coach refused to take his shirt off, which is why if you watch that tribal council, you'll see two things. You'll see Coach wearing his lime green, the dragons t-shirt. And you also see him really bummed out. Like, if you look at him, he's frowning the whole time. He's really upset because he's been through this traumatic thing where He was going to boycott, but then they finally relented. And what I had trouble piecing together was I was getting different stories on what the other jurors ended up wearing. And why that was because, Caitlin's like production had to get them clothes. Candace is like, yeah, we didn't bring clothes on purpose. We're like, we have no other options. So they basically found crew member clothes for them to wear, except for Courtney, who, being Courtney, had a backup plan and like stuck a shirt in her purse, which is why. So if you watch that, you're seeing Coach in his dragon shirt. You're seeing Courtney in her regular shirt. But everything else is crew member stuff, including JT. I mean, you look at what JT's wearing. It's this loud red. So he would never wear that in a million years. So that's what happened. And you literally almost had someone refuse to attend tribal council, which is just amazing. I love it. It's just incredible. And that's just the passion of the Dragon Slayer. You have to love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. Which tribal is that? Is that Colby getting voted out?
No, that is Danielle. That's Danielle getting voted out. I'm pretty sure. When Candace got voted out is when they wore the all black.
Yeah.
And Danielle was the next night.
This is a double episode. So
that's where it all went down. And that was, and they were all, it wasn't just the three, Amanda had her dragon stuff on. Like I said, like Candace had her dragon stuff on. They were all, part of the entourage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the people incredible. That came off of the show then that weren't part of the Dragons, like I bet that the dragon stuff probably was kind of annoying of that it was going on. Like I love, like, on shows where they talk about, like on Saved by the Bell, if they ever like reference like the opinions of the other kids at the high school, like what they think of like the kids that we see all the time on the, like, at the center of the show. Like, I think it's like, oh my God, again with the band. It's like, there was no escaping the dragons.
Right. No, there wasn't. And it seems like at first people were kind of into it. And then, as Courtney says, like, the later it got, Colby, Jerry, Rupert, although Rupert is on one of the songs.
Yeah.
He did perform on one of the songs, but like, for the most part, they weren't as into it. They actually were, dealing with, actual life and other stuff, and they didn't need to be part of the band.
Right, because I'm not sure what day Coach goes out, but I mean, it's early. I mean, Coach is actually pre-merge that he gets voted out in Heroes vs. Villains.
I always thought that was so weird. I never liked that, by the way, when people would be on the jury pre-merge. Well, I guess just another reason to hate Edge of Extinction.
What if they started a band on the Edge of Extinction? Would you like it more?
Where are they going to get the instruments, Rob? Where are they going to get the recording material?
Wendell can make them.
So true. So true. And Wendell, which is so great. I mean, again, what a great punctuation to sort of the piece that at season 40, Ponderosa, which obviously we all know was a limited Ponderosa series because they were on the edge of extinction. But when he shows up, he sort of does the Chris Noble, Sammy Sosa line, which is just sort of the perfect button onto this whole sort of weird musical adventure thing of Ponderosa. But yeah, it's a nice callback, I guess. But yeah, it's Coach was just bored, man. Like they had nothing to do. And JT is a wacky dude and Courtney's up for a party. So that's just how it started. It rained constantly there. And Samoa, I really like Samoa. I went there twice and I really enjoyed it, but it's like, it's not really beachy. It's sort of weird. Like it's very rocky. And so even when it's nice, it's not like not like you're gonna be laying out on the beach all day there necessarily. So they were stuck inside. There wasn't a whole lot to do. They were on lockdown. They couldn't go on like some of the day trips that often people on Ponderosa get to do. So this is what they came up with.
Dalton, did you make yourself a Dragon Slayer cocktail at any point during the quarantine?
I'm scared to. Well, I don't drink liquor. If I were going to drink liquor, I would try the Dragon Slayer. He stands by it. He swears by it. He claims it's world famous. Caitlin Moore begs to differ. The whole thing is crazy. I mean, I love awkward like television, meaning like, The Office and Curb Your Enthusiasm or the old Ally G show. And so I'm sort of obsessed with awkward situations. And I think about, again, going back to that night, of Jeff Probst showing up and saying, "Let's hear what you got." And the Dragons playing for Probst. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that situation and just to see what it's like. And then Courtney says in her quote that he brought out sheet music for Maggie May and they're playing it, but no one really knows the song that well. And I just, I would love to be there, but I'd probably be watching with my hands like over my eyes, just sort of peeking through my fingers. It's incredible. So good.
Yeah, while we don't have the recorded Maggie May version, you were able to uncover several, I believe, never heard before tracks. Of course, many Survivor fans have seen the video for On the Dance Floor, but you uncovered, I believe, of what, four or five previously never unheard Dragons tracks?
Yeah, so there's five songs that comprise the complete Ponderosa EP, Rob. And you're right that you, on the dance floor, we have the video for that. That's in the piece. You can watch that. It's brilliant. And then there's four other songs that if you watch the Ponderosa video series, you would have heard little snippets of here and there, but never just the entire performance. And one song I'm not sure you've ever heard really in any form at all. And it's all there. So you get five choice cuts, and we put them all. We put it all on YouTube, and we have it all in the article as well. And you can listen to them all with a little dragon slideshow we put together of images of the band in their natural habitat. And it's kind of funny because it's all they tried all these different genres. You know, like one song is Dragon's rap, where JT is beatboxing. And Rupert's in there, and Amanda's rapping in that song at one point. You heard someone rapping about the big sky, because that's Amanda being from Montana. And then you've got the power ballad song Slay, which is a classic as well. And I may have to pull that up, Rob, real quickly, because that has my favorite Dragon lyrics of all time. I mean, some of the lyrics make no sense. I mean, like Courtney says, it's like written by someone who English is a second language. Or sometimes, you know, you get an email from some spam person and they're trying to make it seem like it's from here and it's English, but it's clearly not. A lot of the lyrics are like that.
Yeah. We showed artificial intelligence 100 right. classic rock videos, and this was the lyrics it spit out.
Yeah. These lyrics make sense, but I love them. This is from Slay, which is their power ballad. And I'll just read you two stanzas here. I need to see your face. And your love I have to chase. I need to feel your breath before I face my death. And here comes the part I really love. When you leave, I am sad. You cheat on me, and I get mad.
Yeah.
That's deep stuff. I love it. I love it. And so, you know, the power ballad, then you've got some sort of like electro sort of pop. You know, you got a few electro pop songs. Like, they're kind of just all over the map.
Yeah. Amazing. Dalton, was there any talk about a reunion in the interviews that you did? Like, is there any talk about getting the band back together? It's 10 years since the Dragons.
I will say this. Norwood and Coach have talked many times through the years about trying to do something. I think that they are now basking in the glow of the renewed attention on the band. You know, as you know, every great band always comes back, right? Every great band, you can't keep them down. So I would say that they're probably having some discussions amongst themselves right now. And my hope is that at some point soon that the Dragons, not unlike if a phoenix, are resurrected from the ashes.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some more material to talk about. And of course, I hope that the Dragons keep inspiring more other bands and music come out of Ponderosa, as we have seen over the past, certainly 10 seasons or so.
Well, I think that the Dragons, Coach, Courtney, JT, and Norwood, that if they had some sort of like a fundraiser, like I think that they could raise some money for charity and get on Zoom and reunite for a virtual concert. I think that's what the fans are clamoring for.
Yeah, and the question is, it's like sort of like, you know, it's like that encore. You're at that concert. and you just, you're clapping, like, you know, that you wanted them to come back up. Sometimes you got to start stomping your feet. Sometimes the band's making you work for it a little harder. You know what I mean? And you just got to keep clapping, keep stomping those feet. My sincere hope and my guess, if I were a betting man, is that we have not heard the last from the Dragon.
Okay. Drop. All right. It's a good tease. One of the other things I thought that was great was that you also had a little bit of an epilogue with some of the other Survivor Ponderosa bands that have tried to follow up and emulate the success of the Dragons. Here's one, Survivor Redemption Island. You talk about a band called Chucho. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, I believe you are, Rob, yes.
Yes. Okay, tell me about Chucho, because I had never heard about this either.
Neither had I. So I'm sitting there, and I'm talking to Norwood Cheek, producer extraordinaire of the Dragons, and he mentions sort of like, oh, you know, yeah, we tried to, you know, sort of rekindle the magic on another season. It didn't quite work out. And I'm like, yeah, hold on. Just stop, full stop right there, sir. What are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, no, I think, and he couldn't really remember at first who was in it. Like, oh, yeah, no, I think it was, and so we're piecing it together that basically it was, at first he thought it was the next season, Survivor Nicaragua, but then he's telling me who's in it, and I realize, oh, no, it's Redemption Island. During the Redemption Island season, they did this, it was basically, I guess, you know, David Murphy was out, and then eventually, you know, Matt Elrod and Andrea Belkey, I guess, were they both voted out twice, I guess? I believe they both were voted out twice, right? Because they both came back from Redemption Island. So whatever, they all eventually end up there. And I guess those three were sort of the partiers at that Ponderosa. And the other rest of the jury members were kind of just like, you know, going about their thing. But they would stay up late at night at this sort of poolside bar called Chucho. And they would have some bevies. Now, at that Ponderosa, which was where I did my pregame interviews for a bunch of seasons, so I've been there, and there was this monkey in this cage that was very active and very loud. And if you're someone like me who's actually a little scared of monkeys, and I had an incident on my honeymoon that I don't care to address now involving monkeys, that's been a little haunting and traumatic, but this thing was like very aggressive. And I remember it was right by where I would do my interviews too. And I guess they became obsessed with this monkey. And then they recorded a song at some point. Norwood was probably talking to them about the Dragons, and they tried to record record their own song called Monkey in a Cage. And it's been buried. It's never been released. It's never been heard. And I said, Norwood, you tell me right now, you better have that song. And he did, and he sent it to me. So not only do you get to hear the story of them recording this song, but you actually get to hear the song. I don't know if you've listened to it yet, Rob, or not.
I scrubbed through it a little bit. I can play some of it if you want.
Well, I'm going to say this. Yeah, you could play a little hot lick from that jam.
Okay.
It's David Murphy. It's Matt Elrod and Andrew Belkey all rapping.
A.K.A. Wyatt Nash.
A.K.A. Wyatt Nash, exactly. And then Andrea sings the chorus, and I actually think she's got a pretty good voice. Courtney, I think she's got some pretty good pipes on her.
She's very talented. All right, here's a little bit of Monkey in a Cage from Chucho.
Of Redempt, that place I had to roam. Blindsided twice, now about Chucho be my home. 110 duels, psh, ain't no thing. Isle of Redemption, I am the king. Ometepe Zapatera, I don't need no tribe. Here at Bachucho, I got my own vibe. Chilling every day, Ponderosa is my stage. So now I ain't nothing but a monkey in a cage.
Monkey in a cage. Yeah, beautiful. Very autobiographical.
It certainly is, Rob. That was Matt Elrod, I believe, doing
like
his rap.
Like the Super Bowl shuffle of Ponderosa.
Nice callback. Yeah, it's, it's really absurd and a little bit sad how excited I got Like when that popped into my inbox, that song, and like I was just about to hit the play button. It was almost like sort of, you know, back in the day when like a new Prince song would come out, mm-hmm. or you know, like I was getting so excited to press play on Chucho, Monkey in a Cage, and now it has been unleashed unto the world. You can hear the whole thing in the Dragon's Oral History. We put that one up on YouTube as well. You can check it out okay. if you want.
Tell me about the Worlds Apart version of the Survivor Ponderosa band.
Well, this is America. Yeah. We all remember from the show, they named the tribe America, for better or for worse. That was the tribe name, and that apparently spilled over into Ponderosa as well. And this was started, Haley Ford, you know, who mm-hmm. had her guitar and is a musician and a singer. And I guess she started this band with Joey Amazing. I hesitate to even say his name because I'm worried Stephen Fishback is just going to start, you know, having PTSD, but, Joey Amazing and Haley sort of started this. And as more people got voted out, they sort of came together to record this song. And more importantly, record a video for the song America, which features some of the lyrics, America, I swearica, worlds apart, three worlds, one heart, God bless tribe America.
Yeah.
Now, this is the new, now that Chucho has been released and all the Dragons catalog has been released, this is the new holy grail of Ponderosa bands. I got in touch with the... What we think happened here is basically, essentially, after talking to some of the parties, the guilty parties involved, as it were, they said that the director of Ponderosa at the time was not so keen on this entire concept, and maybe was worried that maybe he wanted to disassociate himself a little bit.
Creative differences
from America. Yeah, I believe that may be the case, Rob. So I think it was sort of buried. I did reach out to this individual, and I did not hear back.
Hmm.
So the one frustration of this article is that I could not provide the world exclusive worldwide debut of America, both the band and the song. It still is out there somewhere, I assume. Unfortunately, we'll never know.
Yeah.
But you know, all the parties involved are pretty clear that it is not good. Like you know, I talked to a few of them.
Nobody Shireen was thinking Haley. It was.
but they knew what they were doing, and you could see some of the pictures that we put in the piece that you've probably seen maybe on social media before from the Dirty 30. That, you know, but they were having fun. They were just goofing off, and they're at Ponderosa, and they're stuck around. They're like, let's make a goofy song and music video. And that they did.
Yeah. And then you also touch on the Noble one, Ponderosa, from Chris Noble. And I think that why that one works is that I think that the other ones were trying to be the Dragons. And then the Chris Noble is just a, you know, a solo piece, which I think that sort of like broke away from like, hey, we are a Survivor Ponderosa supergroup.
I love it so much, Rob.
Yeah.
I love it so much. I love the Noble one, just in general. I love the Noble one. And then his rap video and song is so amazing.
Yeah, it's really well done also.
To your point, when I talked to the Ponderosa director, James Seal, he wasn't even aware of the Dragons. And that's probably why it's so great. Like, he didn't even know that, like, hey, you know, at that point, whatever it was, 16 seasons ago, there was this whole other, you know, band that did a video and this and that. He had no clue. And he just heard that, like, you know, Chris gets off, he gets voted out, and he sort of talks about how, oh, you know, I was rapping a lot on the show and that'll probably make it on the thing. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, huh, well, what if that's going to be a thing on the show, why don't we play it off it? And they just literally went in, they bought a beat online, like, I guess you can do that. Mm-hmm. And then recorded this video. I think they did it in like 2 days, I think.
Yeah.
And it's so genius just because, like they just hit all the perfect sort of cliche, you know, shot locations. Like, he's getting the massage, he's on the raft, he's on the jet ski, he's in a helicopter, you know, he's just a big baller, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's so funny. And the fact that Chris is able to sort of, he's clearly in on the joke, and he's clearly like laughing at himself. The slow motion shot under the waterfall where he dips his glasses down, I mean, that's your money shot right there. It's so freaking funny. I absolutely love it. And it's just sort of, honestly, I don't know how you top it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you can. I don't think you can. I think that it needs to go away, the Ponderosa music video, for at least 5 years.
But why it's great, too, is because while it's all a joke, the Noble One took it very seriously, which is clear when I spoke to him about it recently. Like, he took it, you know, for it to be funny, he has to take it seriously. And you know, it's now, you know, the classic line, you know, it's like with Sammy Sosa. It's just like we all know it. And it's just also, it's just so great. And it's, you know, living on a dream on Ponderosa, swung for the fences. I call it Sammy Sosa. It's idiotic and silly, but it's also genius and incredible.
Yeah, Dalton, I think what the through line here is of when it works versus when it doesn't work. I think Chris Noble and Coach, like, both felt like, okay, this is serious. This isn't a joke. Yeah. This is actually really good. This is going to be a big hit. And I think that the ones that, like, when we get to Worlds Apart, everybody there is like, okay, well, they didn't think that this is going to be real. This is a joke.
Right.
We're goofing off.
Right.
Okay. And so that's why it doesn't work. Somebody has to be buying in that this is serious.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just why it's so great. I mean, that's why the shot of Coach on the dance floor video, when he's on the rocks and the shirt is wide open,
mm-hmm.
and like the breeze, like, it's not just wide open, it's like they have 10 fan machines around them because it's flapping in the breeze, and he's flexing, and it's like, but he's not parodying something, he's living it, he's feeling mm-hmm. it, he's embodying it, he is the Dragon Slayer. Iron is sharpening iron in this music video, and that's why it's so perfect.
Okay, Dalton, I have to ask, do you have any other ideas for another oral history that are percolating?
I will say, I sent out a tweet the night before saying, hey, you know, I'm going to have something dropping tomorrow, another oral history. And of course, everyone was sending their guesses or ideas. And one person said it as a joke, but I actually kind of thought it was brilliant. Was it involves Coach again doing an oral history on the Jack and Jill movie Reward?
Yes,
movie
yes.
Award. Because people that have read my recaps know I've been obsessed with that for years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm always obsessed with Big Brother or Survivor movie or TV show premiere rewards because they're usually terrible, like Gulliver's Travels and all these terrible things. But yet the contestants have to act like they're great because it's bought in, like it's literally sold that contestant will compliment the movie and the contestants know, hey, this is a way for me to score a little extra screen time. I'll just say how much I love Applebee's or how great this Jack and Jill movie is or how incredible these, you know, Tootsie Rolls is, whatever the product placement is. I encourage there's nothing I love more. If you get on Survivor, all I want you to do is whenever you sniff out product placement, just be so insanely effusive about it because mm-hmm. I literally just inject that right into my veins. I love it.
Like the Survivor 39 cast with Applebee's, for instance.
Yeah, that was my favorite. I mean, cast Karishma on every single season as far as I'm concerned just for that because that was just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I love Applebee's.
It's amazing. I want everyone to do it. I mean, everyone to do it. It's just so, so good. And what I love about the Applebee's too is like those are Survivor like producers and crew members pretending to be the Applebee's staff.
Yeah,
that's Milhouse from the Challenge Department, like sitting there with an Applebee's uniform on, going up and start, the contestants have seen Milhouse at all the challenges. As you know, they walk around before the challenge. They do a walkthrough, and Probst and Kierhofer and Milhouse are all there. And then all of a sudden, here's Milhouse in an Applebee's uniform. It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Dalton. Well, I guess, can I ask you real quick about, you had written an article recently about Big Brother All-Stars and the possibilities that could be. Now, that is just a rumor, right? That is not officially corroborated by CBS?
I know that they are looking to stage a Big Brother.
Yeah.
Same way they're still trying to get Survivor on. I know that they are talking to returning players. They will not officially say that, but that is happening. Now, what exact form takes, we'll see. And, you know, I think, Rob, you and I probably knowing the way this works. I mean, on one hand, Big Brother completely makes sense as the first show to come back in a quarantine,
because
it is a show based on quarantine. And you literally are separating contestants from the rest of the world. And that even includes, for the most part, the crew, who they, you know, the cameras are either remotely set or there's camera people behind mirrors. You know, diary rooms are done through a wall. You know, like, on one hand, this should be easy. On the other hand, there are still logistical hurdles that would have to be cleared. You know, they set up challenges in the backyard. Like, how are you going to just mass disinfect those things after they're set up? And there are people in the backyard, you know, setting those up. Other times, people might have to go in the house to do things. I mean, you can tailor that stuff somewhat. But you have to quarantine the cast and the crew for 2 weeks before they even enter the house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's you know, usually they're quarantined for more like, I forget what it is, Rob, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 days or something in a hotel before they go in. But it's not 2 weeks. And then how there are other certain situations with the house. But here's also another thing. There's also the crew.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the crew? Even if the crew's not interacting with the cast, the crew can't infect each other. Can you set that all up remotely, have remote workstations where that can be set up and fine? But here's the other thing you need to think about. What about the outside world? I go back to what happened in 2001, right after 9/11, and it was season two, and Monica, 9/11 happened, and Monica had a cousin her body at that time had not been located. And they had to, and of course they did this so tacky. But of course they did this on air. They showed this all on air.
Mm-hmm.
Poor taste. They explained to Monica, okay, basically planes have gone in the World Trade Center. We can't find your cousin, which is not great.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, let's just say that you can keep this cast safe. You can keep the crew safe. We've already seen in some states that have reopened, numbers going back up. What happens if you get a cast in there and a loved one of theirs gets really sick? You know, what happens when that happens? What happens if, okay, we figure out a system and we can have the crew all working in this and we'll have 3 crew members in at a time, but they'll be 6 feet apart. But what happens if situation gets worse and you have to adjust? You know, what if you have to do what happened with The Amazing Race, where 3 weeks into it or whatever, a few legs into it, they had to stop the middle of the season? So I'd be interested to hear your take, but there's much more logistics even outside of the players and the crew.
Yeah. Well, just to go back to the Big Brother 2 example, there was a long period of time that they waited before they even had told them about it. I mean, there was a period of time where basically those three people in the Big Brother house at that point were the only people in the United States that did not know about 9/11. So there was like a big question. People were upset that they hadn't told them, where I forget how long it was before they actually went ahead and let them know about that, but I think it was at least 24 hours.
And multiply that, Rob, because that, listen, 9/11 took place in, you know, in New York and D.C., where, I mean, just talking where people remotely had a chance of, you know, dying. But this is a pandemic that is touching every corner of the country.
Yeah.
And what, you're going to let people sit in there and not know about it?
Yeah. I do think that you would probably have to, and I don't know why this would be problematic for the production of, you know, let people, you know, do a check-in with everybody back home. You know, is that going to affect the game? Like, is it going to give them a little more reassurance about what's happening at home that they wouldn't have otherwise? Maybe, but who cares? So, you know, let people, like, get that, you know, phone call from home, you know, a couple times a week and make sure that everything is okay. And if anybody has to walk away, you know, they have to walk away. But, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, like, nothing like that would end up happening. But I think that the peace of mind would go a long way.
I agree. And they'd have to do something like that. Whether it's a, hey, I don't think they'd allow a live phone call in case someone blurted something out, but probably just like, hey, record a message. I'm just going to make this up. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, we're bringing back Josh Martinez. you know, Josh's family members, you know, every 3 days, every week, whatever it is, can leave him a message. We'll check it, make sure you're not saying anything that's going to like tip off, hey, this guy's got a secret power, and then we'll deliver it to him. So yeah, either that or an email, just something. I can't imagine that they wouldn't do that, because you go in that house, you have to know your family and loved ones are safe. I mean, Rob, you wouldn't do it, right? You wouldn't go in there and know like how your wife and family would be completely cut off from them in this environment. Like, I can't imagine anyone would.
Well, I have been quarantined with them for the last couple of months, Dalton.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd explore it. No. Or they could just call production every day and then, hey, is everybody good at home? Yes, and we checked in, everything's fine. So at least be able to pass on any sort of information like that. But we'll see. It would be very exciting if we could get some of these productions back up and running.
Yeah, it's just what's so hard is that things keep moving and things keep changing. I mean, let's just talk about this a little bit. What do you do if you set Big Brother in motion and then everything happening in the country, you know, after George Floyd? Mm-hmm. Let's say the pandemic had never happened. And you have all this protesting happening out there and all these big changes and a lot of terrible events happening. Would they have told anyone in the house about that? Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess not. But now, like, what are you keeping from people? It's really difficult. There's so much happening even beyond the COVID-19 front.
Yeah. All good questions to be talking about as we head into hopefully some of these shows coming back. Dalton, I know that you're so tapped in with everything with Entertainment Weekly that in terms of scripted shows, do you know if scripted television is going to be coming back anytime soon in the next couple of months?
They just came out with some guidelines for filming and, there's going to have certain zones. And there'll be certain people that are in zone one and they have more access to do different things. Zone two are going to be more sort of like have to stay on the fringes a little bit. Zone three will be on the outside. So they have all these weird zones like that they're working out. You know, I've been on sets before, Rob, and I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know how they're going to do it responsibly. There's so many people working on a set at all time, as you know, everyone can figure out, not just the actors and stuff, but you know, the lighting and then the props and the sound and all this stuff. And I just, unless everyone on every production is in a bubble for 2 weeks, unless no one's going home to be with their family and their family members are going to the supermarket or seeing other people, I don't know how this works. I really don't. It's this whole thing with society where, you know, the economy is terrible and unemployment is going way up and people out of work, and that's terrible. So we're trying to find a way as a society to, you know, get people back so they can put food on the table. But how do we do that in a responsible manner where we're not killing people at the same time? And that's the push and pull we're having in our country. And the entertainment industry is just like that, right? Like we think about the big stars, but think about the guy who's holding the boom mic up and he's out of work and he needs to provide for his family. And I'm not saying that they should go back in production, but I'm just giving that side of it. And the other side of it is, yeah, well, what if he goes back and then, he gets sick and he passes it on to his father who's living with him and then he dies. There's no good answer for it. I don't know what they're going to do. They're all trying to figure out a roadmap to getting back, getting productions back, moving. But it's almost one of these things like they're going to, listen, that bubble is going to be pierced because it's not even really a bubble. And we're talking about scripted shows now. Mm-hmm. Make up any show you want. SWAT. I don't know. That's a CBS show. Like what happens when someone on SWAT gets sick? Mm-hmm. And that person, you realize he's sick after he's been working on set for 2 days. What happens? It's the same thing in sports, right? Like they're going to have to figure it with football, Rob. And I know that's been on your and my mind with the rotten coconuts. How do you manage that once a few players get sick? Do you shut down the whole team? Do you shut down the whole production of SWAT, God forbid? So I don't know how they're going to do it. I know that they're coming up with a plan for it. I just don't know how how sustainable it is.
Yeah, I think that testing is going to have to go hand in hand with whatever they're going to do. And I don't know if in on the set of a production where every single person has to be submitted to testing and for how often, and then you have to ramp up the testing if you have a positive case. I'm sure it's all hand in hand, but great questions that we're all wrestling with right now.
No, you're right. Testing is a huge part of it. And like, can they afford to, like, and will they have the test to test everyone in the crew every single day? And I mean, how quickly are you getting those test results? And it's beyond it. It has to go beyond a temperature check, right? Mm-hmm. We all know that they can say we're doing temperature checks, but a temperature check, if you're asymptomatic or just have not developed these symptoms yet, is a temperature check's only going to do so much. So you can test someone. And then, like, for instance, I just had my first COVID test last Wednesday, and I got the results back Saturday morning, which was actually, right as I was coming down to Washington to be here. So, you need immediate results from your test, because you can get tested, but unless you're getting tested every day, you can still contract something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a mess, and we all want programming back, but how is it going to be done responsibly? We'll see, man. And obviously this also goes hand in hand with when the vaccine is going to come around and when drug testing come around. And I'm way out of my league talking about any of these topics because I am not a scientist.
Yeah.
I do try and follow science.
Yeah. It all brings us back to why you might have wanted to do a deep dive into a Ponderosa rock band from 10 years
That's
ago.
That's exactly it. I got to say, listen, I've been injecting disinfectant in my body and I feel great. Like, I feel like a million bucks. So, no, that's obviously a joke. Please don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dalton, thank you for spending so much time with us today. I know you have a lot going on, so I always appreciate it.
I really appreciate it, Rob. It's fun to talk about. It's fun writing these stories, but I honestly also have a lot of fun talking with you about it. Like,
I love to get the oral history of your oral history.
Yes, the oral history of the oral history. I appreciate everything talking to you and everything that you've been doing as well. So I hope we get to talk soon.
Okay. All right. Of course, check out Dalton Ross on Twitter. Everything that he has going on with EW, of course, check out EW Live on Sirius XM channel 109. Anything else, Dalton?
I think you've covered it, man. I think you and I are in the same boat. We're trying to come up with creative ways to do things, like what you've been doing with the podcast and what I've trying to do the story, and like hopefully we will have to be less creative soon once all this stuff comes back.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just to show you like how creative we're being, coming up next, I believe the next podcast we're gonna have for you is that your friend and mine, Mike Bloom of parade.com,
wow,
that he has, when we were raising money for PPE for doctors and nurses with directrelief.org, that we had reached, I think, $21,000 raise. And Mike Bloom had said, hey, if it gets to $23,000, I will get a survivor tattoo put on my body. We passed that threshold, and the next podcast we are working on is the selection show, where we are going to narrow the field of Mike Bloom's survivor tattoos down to the field of 20.
Now, do we get any say on the placement of where the tattoo goes? Like, if he raises some more money, can we decide, like, are we going tramp stamp style here?
It's
like,
good
can we
question.
Decide where that
good
sucker's going to go?
We'll talk about that all with Mike Bloom.
Like, how much for a face tattoo? How much for a face tattoo? Like, how high do we have to get like a tattoo right on the face?
I don't know. We'll find out. I believe that Mike's wife Angela does have veto power. She has the power of veto.
She does. Okay.
On anything. So we have to get her on board first. So we'll
see. Do you
have
a tattoo, Rob?
I don't.
But, I don't either. I'm not a tattoo guy.
Yeah, but this all came up out of Denise's Endure and Let Go tattoos.
I know. I'm way too fickle. Like, I would get a tattoo and like a year later I'd be regretting the tattoo. I'm way just too neurotic to like have something on my body permanently. You know what I mean? That's my problem.
Yeah, I feel like that I change my taste. I feel like that maybe like my kids' names. I think that this is the only thing, because I think that I'll always like them. I think that I won't change my opinion.
Well, they haven't gotten to the teenage years yet, Ross.
I guess so.
Don't be so sure about that. I've lived through that twice, so don't worry about that. I feel like I'm the guy, like back in the 90s, like I may have gotten like the regrettable like barbed wire around the biceps. You know what I mean? Like that, I would have done something, or I would have gotten like just a really bad like band logo,
the dragons
tattoo or something. The dragons. Now that's one I wouldn't regret, honestly. Mm-hmm. That's one I wouldn't regret.
Yeah, so, had Coach gotten dragons tattooed across his chest, what could they do?
That's right. I'm worried for Mike. I'm honestly very worried for Mike. I love the money raised, but I'm otherwise worried for him. And because of that, I really am just putting it out there that I think location needs to be discussed. It's all, listen, it's, I sound like a real estate agent, but location, 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 Rob.
Yeah.
It's what it's all about, and I think some serious thought needs to get into the placement of where we're going to put this.
Okay.
Sticker.
Well, maybe in your honor, maybe the Dragons logo should be thrown into the mix for the Mike Bloom Survivor
Tattoo. I think it should
tattoo. Be. Okay.
I think it absolutely should be. Right above the small of the back, if possible.
Yes. All right, I'll see if I can rip it off of one of those green T-shirts that Coach wanted to wear.
Yes.
All right. Dalton,
yes, please do.
Thank you so much. This was so great. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.